Hello and welcome back to It's a Musical podcast, the podcast show where we watch a musical every week and I force my boyfriend to learn and talk about it.
I am the boyfriend.
And I'm Drew. This week we are talking about Once Upon a Mattress.
O-U-A-M.
Yes. Not O-U-A-T.
No, I would really be on board with O-U-A-T right about now.
We're jumping into the fairy tale world with this one.
Yes, I do like me some fairy tales.
Yeah. So before I tell you anything about this, what do you know about Once Upon a Mattress? Or, alternately, what do you think Once Upon a Mattress is about?
Okay. I'm assuming it is loosely inspired by the story of the Princess and the Pea.
Yes.
Mostly because of the whole mattress.
Yeah.
I initially thought it was quite a rude musical because of the title.
Yeah, okay.
Which you assured me no.
I don't think it is.
I think the title just made me think it was maybe something more along the lines of Avenue Q.
Yeah, because we've talked about this before in terms of school shows.
Yes.
Because I think it's a really good ensemble show that you could do a lot with as a school performance.
Whereas I thought, you really want me to sell a show called Once Upon a Mattress.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how seriously this takes itself. It's quite a fun, playful name, so I'm thinking it's quite a fun, playful show.
Yeah, this doesn't take itself seriously at all.
Now, I'm assuming that because it's on Disney Plus, which is our go-to for most musicals, apparently.
Surprisingly, yeah.
Was this a Disney original?
No. So the version that we're watching today, we're going to watch the 2005 Wonderful World of Disney movie version.
See, that's why I thought this was a newer musical, mm-hmm. which you debunked last week after we talked about a Harry Potter musical. You said it was done in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
I had initially thought, based on the image and the font that is presented with on Disney Plus, that this was something created during the DCOM wave.
Okay, so do you remember when we did Cinderella?
Yes. Do you remember?
It's so annoying. When we talked about Cinderella, I said around the time that the 90s Cinderella came out,
yes.
Wonderful World of Walt Disney were trying to get their TV channel sort of up and running, and they were introducing all of these fairy tale themed movie musicals to their TV channel. This is one of those.
Okay.
However, instead of trying to write their own one, which is what Disney Channel original movies become, it's DCOMs, they have once again taken an old musical and put it onto their channel.
So Disney had nothing to do with this when it was first written?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely nothing.
How long was the channel called The Wonderful World of Disney?
Not long.
Because you've just referred to it as The Wonderful World of Disney in 2005. I'm pretty certain in The Santa Claus, which would have been released in like 95, 96, one of the jokes is we're getting the Disney Channel this year.
I think.
So it really can't have been Wonderful World of Disney for that long. And it surprises me that you know it as that. Because
I'm a 90s baby.
Well, but a 90s baby that maybe you'd have been two when it stopped being branded as A Wonderful World of Disney.
I suppose, but I owned most of the things that were on The Wonderful World of Disney. I owned on DVD or VHS as a child, and they opened with The Wonderful World of Disney presents. So that's why I know.
But again, I'm kind of debunking that because I had all the same VHSs and DVDs.
No, I'm talking about these.
Okay, because
like
I didn't
Cinderella,
watch these.
Once Upon a Mattress, these things.
That's fair. I didn't watch these. I remember having all of these Disney VHS and Disney DVDs, mostly things like Aladdin, Return of Jafar.
And yeah, the bad sequels.
The bad sequels that you said were designed for this.
Mm-hmm.
And they never once said The Wonderful World of Disney. I had not heard that until our Cinderella episode.
Yeah, so from what I understand and what I sort of theorise, essentially, is that The Wonderful World of Disney is a mouthful.
Yes.
And rather than say, come on, kids, let's watch the Wonderful World of Disney Channel, they would just say, Disney, let's put Disney Channel on. Yeah. And eventually it probably just became that. In the same way that Coca-Cola is now just branded as Coke.
Yeah.
Because nobody can be bothered to say Coca-Cola every time they want one. Like, no, that's just how it works.
Exactly. It does make sense. I just wondered how long the branding had gone for.
Yeah. So we are, as you said, jumping back to the 1950s with this one.
Okay.
In 1950, there was essentially an adult summer camp resort called the Tenement, which was designed for Broadway songwriters, musicians, actors, producers to come and basically hang out in a retreat style for the summer and write and put on mini versions of shows that they would like to bring to Broadway.
Okay.
In 1958, at this camp, a group of producers and writers wrote a parody of The Princess and the Pea as a play, and they performed it at the end of the camp in the summer, and it got picked up, and they got told they were going to be allowed to take it to Broadway, but that it needed to be made into a musical. So they hired Mary Rodgers, daughter of Richard Rodgers.
So Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yes, to write their music for them. She has a very sub Rodgers and Hammerstein style.
Okay.
In that you can hear the Rodgers and Hammerstein in it, but it's very clearly moving forward from them.
It's her own movement.
Yeah. The lyrics were written by Marshall Bearer, and then the book was written by Jay Thompson, Marshall Bearer, and Dean Fuller. So they were all at this camp, and they wrote this together.
So this is a pretty big deal. This would have been their first professional production.
Yeah.
And they just happened to be noticed. Something that's gone from being a bit of fun has really changed.
Yeah. And they literally wrote it to be a silly show to put on to make everyone laugh at the end of the summer, because they spent the entire summer writing like big shows and putting a lot of work into it. So this was like to blow off steam.
So this is almost like...
It's Frankenstein, well, is what it's like.
This is almost like Warner Brothers just happened to have seen a Harry Potter musical, and instead of doing the whole banning it on YouTube and not endorsing it, this is them going to Starkin and saying, here's 10 million.
Yeah.
Here's a stage on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Off you go.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it is.
Yeah. Because in 1959, it got moved to a theatre off Broadway.
Yeah.
And then later on that same year, it got moved onto Broadway.
Yeah.
So this is, the trajectory of it is insane. For them to, 1958, we've written this play, okay, we're going to be on Broadway now, better write it into a musical and make it full length. They do that within a year. Then it gets put off Broadway to trial it, and then is immediately moved on to actual Broadway.
Because of how sensational it is.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Which is
crazy. And it ran for 244 performances in its original run, which is a decent performance length.
Oh yeah, totally. You know.
Not groundbreaking, but well, good.
Considering the sheer influx of new content all the time.
Especially in the 50s.
Yeah. If you look by today's standards, things are good, but they just don't stay for long.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was a good show with value of a Roald Dahl title.
Yeah.
Didn't stick around for long. Shrek hasn't stuck around for long in the UK, at least. These are shows that are certainly bankable.
Yeah.
But there's always something hotter coming along.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be something pretty outstanding, like Les Mis, Wicked, etc., to stand that test of time.
Yeah.
And that's not a slight on any of these shows that haven't. I've named a few shows in the past that I've seen that aren't on anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed them. But, you know, there's always something new for consumers.
Yeah. So when it closed in 1960,
yeah,
it went on a US tour straight away. So that went all around the US. Then it came to the West End, 1960. And then it ran here for a while. Again, not groundbreaking, but just a normal theatre run. Then we got a 1972 CBS TV version of it. And then the 2005 version that we're watching today.
in between the CBS version and the Disney version,
mm-hmm.
were there any revivals?
Yes, there was a 1996 Broadway revival, which got nominated for a Best Revival at the Tonys, but again, didn't wow anybody particularly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think it's a great musical, but I understand why it isn't groundbreaking and why it isn't doing as well as other musicals we've talked about before. I think it is because it's like a small musical.
Yeah, but I also think maybe in the 50s it would have stood out more because, based on my limited knowledge of musicals from that period, they're quite serious.
Yeah.
They take themselves seriously.
Mm-hmm.
However, as time's gone on, you've obviously got new writers, musicians, composers who are more influenced by people they grew up loving and actually take a less serious approach to their work because they're trying to showcase all of their theatre knowledge. Mm-hmm. You look at Matt Stone and Trey Parker with Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
To make your comedy musical stand out nowadays, it's got to be really up there.
Yeah.
Which probably means it's more difficult for Once Upon a Mattress to maybe get funding or a performance nowadays because of the competition. But at the time, it stood out for a bit, but maybe the novelty wore off because most people expect serious fare for their musicals.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. So the original cast starred Carol Burnett, who I'm aware that you're not going to know who she is.
I do recognise the name.
She's Miss Hannigan in Annie.
Okay.
The original one.
Is she a lot more pleasant in this then?
She is a lot more pleasant in this. She, in the original show, that was her debut role. She's one of the main characters in that. The main female character, I would say.
Hard sex. So she debuted with Once Upon a Mattress.
Yes.
Awesome.
And then she went and did the tour with it. And then she was in the CBS movie version, TV movie version.
Cool.
And she's also in the version we're going to watch today, but she's not playing the same character anymore.
So it's almost like a cameo.
Yeah. Well, no, she's still the main character. She's just not playing. She was a young woman.
Well, when she was obviously, she can't be the same person who she played, but that's really awesome. It's not like Les Mis where you give cameos to people who originated roles in smaller ones.
Yeah.
This is giving her a key role.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, she's still a very important character.
I think that's cool. You know, I like it when you see performers returning to musicals or shows that they've done, but obviously with age against them, taking on different roles. Jason Donovan, for instance, has done Joseph as Joseph and then Pharaoh.
Yeah.
That must be really cool to see multiple versions. I could imagine seeing maybe nowadays a My Fair Lady where Julie Andrews plays
the housekeeper.
I was going to say Henry Higgins' mother.
Oh, yeah. That's probably better. Well, I mean, her difference is she played Eliza and then she directed it, so.
Oh, I know, but could you imagine seeing a My Fair Lady on stage with Julie Andrews starring
a
smaller role?
It's like Whoopi Goldberg played the main character in Sister Act, and then in the stage version, which she produced, went on for a couple of weeks as the Mother Superior.
Yeah.
She felt she was too old to play her main character anymore.
And it is very cool, which, I think.
Interestingly, she would have been on currently playing the main character again. Which is interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah, I forgot that she was due to do that this year.
Yeah, I was supposed to get to see that.
I know.
I'm very upset. Interestingly, in the revival version in 1996, Sarah Jessica Parker played the role that Carol Burnett played originally.
I like Sarah Jessica Parker.
Same. And I've listened to her soundtrack version of it, and she's a very good singer.
Yes, that doesn't surprise me.
The only thing I had previously heard her sing in was Hocus Pocus.
Which isn't the best
barometer. Which is like backup.
Exactly, but also isn't necessarily the most serious of features.
I know what else I've heard her sing in. She's in Glee.
She does sing in Glee.
And she's good.
Because she
sings as Kurt. Yeah, she's Kurt's boss. And she sings a song from Annie.
Really?
Yeah. Never Fully Dressed Without Smiles from Annie.
Is Once Upon a Mattress featured in Glee at all?
Don't think so. I'm sure somebody can tell me whether I'm wrong or not. I don't know Glee well enough. There is one song from this show that is on the Do Not Sing list. which the Do Not Sing list is essentially a list of songs that are so overdone in auditions that they're banned, basically.
Yes, because you're not ever going to outperform them compared to what other people have done. Yeah. And obviously, as well, it's kind of getting to that point where we've heard these so many times.
Yeah, we don't want to hear you come in an audition and sing Memory unless you are Elaine Page. Like, yes. There's no point.
No, agreed.
Don't come in and sing On My Own. We've heard it 1,000 times. You're not going to show us anything new.
Exactly. With your voice. Yeah, and that's something I always face when it comes to exams is you've got some really good, reliable shows, but how many other secondary schools are doing that same text for GCSE
yeah.
that the same examiner will have seen? How do you make it stand out?
Mm-hmm. And how do you put your own spin on it? Because there's not much you can do. It's like I watched a Seth Rudetsky thing recently.
I don't know who that is.
I know you don't, but I love him. And he was talking about how he saw an audition once where somebody came in and sang The Wizard and I, and at the end she put a riff on the high note.
Yeah.
And that he plays piano when auditions happen. So he sat at the piano playing away and she put this riff on it and he stopped playing because this girl had put a riff on The Wizard and I, and he could see the whole panel had just gone completely silent. We're just looking at this girl thinking, why would you do that? Because number one, it's not a good song to audition with because, again, you kind of can't put your own spin on it.
Yes.
I'm sure there's an exception to that. Because I'm sure there's someone phenomenal out there who could do their own take on that and be amazing. But when it's a song that you've heard a bajillion times, there's no point changing it. It's not going to impress anyone.
Yeah, it's almost taking the risk for risk's sake. And
yeah, that's why they ask you to bring more than one song.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, so.
So what song was on the banned list?
I'm going to ask you afterwards if you can figure out which one it is.
Okay. Is there anyone I'm going to know in this version we're watching?
Yes. So we have in this version Zooey Deschanel.
Ooh, I like Zooey Deschanel.
What have you seen her in?
Elf.
Other than Elf.
Yes, Man. I really like her in that.
I didn't know she was in that.
She's a really good, quirky actress. 500 Days of Summer? No. 50.
Oh, yeah, no, that is her.
Yeah, it's 500 Days of Summer. I was going to say 50 or 500.
I like her in New Girl.
I've not watched New Girl, but I knew... We'd
like it.
There was a weird crossover between New Girl and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is very weird.
Yeah. So we have Carol Burnett and Tracy Ullman.
Tracy Ullman is cropped up in other things that we've watched. She was in Into the Woods. She is Jack's mother.
Yes. Well remembered. We have Dennis O'Hare.
Don't know
no
that.
Relation.
No relation.
No, I didn't think you would know him. Matthew Morrison.
Is Mr. Shu.
Yeah, is in this. And then...
So that'd be really weird then if there is no Once Upon a Time in Glee. Once Upon a Mattress in Glee. You can tell what I'd rather be watching. The pots are in full view of me, Drew.
I think there's probably a reference to the song that I'm... The Do Not Sing list song that I'm talking about.
Probably telling Rachel not to sing this song. Probably. She probably then sings it because she thinks she knows better than anyone else.
I imagine it's in there somewhere. Because she's Rachel Berry. And then Edward Hibbert plays a character who is just referred to as the Wizard.
I cannot say I know him.
You definitely do.
Edward Hibbert. Nope, that face is not ringing any bells. I would need to look through his CV more intricately.
Okie dokie.
But maybe it would. Maybe it would when I hear his voice.
Well, he's in Frasier.
I never really watched Frasier that regularly. It would just be when it was on Channel 4.
Okay, fine. So, based on what we've just talked about, what do you think happens in this film? Because you know the plot of The Princess and the Pea, right?
The Princess and the Pea is a maiden comes to a castle.
Yes.
And... claims to be a princess.
Yes.
And they're not sure she is because she could just be any riffraff.
Right.
But the prince is kind of into her and wants to marry her.
Mm-hmm.
So they put her through the most intricate of tests because only a princess would be able to experience a true soft bed. So they put items in between the mattress and her. So they put mattresses on top of mattresses.
Yeah.
And they put items in between them. And, there's a fork.
Items?
I think there's a fork. And she says she can feel it. And they were like, well, okay, yeah, obviously, because that's quite a big item. And then they put another mattress with another thing, and she keeps feeling, and they're like, well, of course, because it's quite kind of obvious. Tell you what we'll do this time is we'll put a tiny little pee. And sure enough, she can feel the pee, and they're like, wow, you must be a princess, because only a princess would have such a delicate disposition that it's they like could feel such a...
A genuine princess is exceedingly rare.
Exactly. And that's the princess test.
Yeah.
The prince test.
Okay. Basically. But a parody on that.
So perhaps more absurd items. Perhaps the princess is more Eliza Doolittle.
I'm not going to say anything.
Is Zooey Deschanel the princess?
No.
Hmm.
Tracy Ullman's the princess.
Weird casting, but okay.
Think about those. So I've just told you, Tracy Ullman and Carol Burnett and Sarah Jessica Parker all played this same character. Based on what you know about them, what do you think this princess is going to be like?
I don't know anything about Carol Burnett. And Tracy Ullman, I know, had like a sketch show which introduced The Simpsons. And she's... doesn't take stuff too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Jessica Parker, I know her from Sex and the City primarily. And she's quite a fashionista. I have watched Sex and the City. It's a truly fantastic show.
You watch such trash. Just coming from the same person that watches Desperate Housewives.
I love Desperate Housewives. Alas, there is no musical episode of Desperate Housewives you should look forward to. But Sarah Jessica Parker kind of comes across quite serious a lot of the time, but has got really good like comedy chops.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what kind of character. Like, I wouldn't get a commonality between Sarah Jessica Parker and Tracy Ullman.
And Carol Burnett, but you don't know her well enough. We'll talk about it once you've seen it.
What yeah, perhaps it'll make more sense. The connection is.
Okay, so we are off to watch Once Upon a Mattress now.
Yep, I've got my PJs on. I am all ready to get tucked up in bed and see if I can detect the slightest of peas.
Yes, and we will see you when we come back.
It won't be long, because it can't be long before our dream comes true. Because you know I don't belong, and furthermore I shan't belong to anyone but you.
And we're back. We have now watched Once Upon a Mattress, and we are ready to talk about it.
I need to sleep. I haven't slept. I got up to 37,439 and I'm still awake.
Oh, 37,439 what?
Sheep.
Amazing. Did you... Sorry, the first thing I'm going to ask you, did you enjoy the humour in this one?
It was very OTT.
Yeah.
Which is fun, yeah. It was... interesting humour. It was a mix of clean and I think a little bit more grown-up humour, which is always fun.
That's what you want for the audience that's aimed at.
I always say that for a kids' film...
Yeah, which is what Disney have repitched it as with this.
The jokes need to be clean for the children, but also a little bit more for the adults who have to watch it 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And things like Shrek 1, for instance, where they see Lord Farquaad's castle for the first time and Shrek goes to Donkey, do you think he's compensating for something?
Yeah.
Is one of the best jokes because the adults will laugh at that and the kids won't have an idea. And that's the sort of humour you need for kids' films.
Mm-hmm.
And this does a really good job of balancing that.
Yeah, bit of both.
It was very short.
Yeah.
It's possibly one of the shortest we've done at an hour and a half.
It has had some changes from the Broadway
show. That's what I was going to ask, is the Broadway show cannot be that short.
No, and it has a couple more songs and a whole character who aren't in this, version we just watched.
Which is fine. I just, you know, wondered. Obviously, after last week's marathon of 10 hours watching the Very Potter trilogy, it was quite a change to be...
I thought I'd take it easy on you this week.
It's much appreciated.
Especially for a musical that's all about sleeping.
Exactly. So, this one's directed by Kathleen Marshall.
Yes.
Do you know who her brother is?
No.
Rob Marshall, who did Into the Woods.
Oh, that's super interesting.
It is. They come from a musical background together. So they've worked on shows like Victor Victoria.
Yeah,
together.
I knew that.
She's directed Grease before.
Mm-hmm.
So just thought that was quite interesting. Yeah. Not only is Tracy Ullman on her second appearance with Into the Woods, mm-hmm. Rob Marshall's name has cropped up in Cinderella, which was The Wonderful World of Disney.
Yep.
And there's another connection here, which I just thought you'd like to know.
Yeah. We're going to have a lot of things like that, I think. Like, for Annie, obviously Carol Burnett is going to come back when we look at that. And
yes.
Which we're not probably going to do anytime soon, but eventually when we get to Annie.
Well, I think because you've got plans for Annie to be very like a Harry Potter musical.
Yeah. Because there's three Annie movies.
There are three Annie movies.
And they're all the same. We're going to have a great time.
I reckon so. It was weird because I mentioned to you that I had no idea who a lot of these actors were.
Yeah.
And then watching it, I'm thinking, oh, this person's in this, or this person's in this. So Dennis O'Hare is in True Blood.
Yes, which we haven't got around to that.
Well, I have seen it in the past.
Yeah. I'm watching it for the first time.
And we have just stopped at the end of season two just to kind of do other binges.
Yeah, and he's in season three.
He starts showing up in season three, which would be really super interesting.
Yeah.
Carol Burnett, I am aware of because there are Family Guy jokes.
I'm sure there are Family Guy jokes. Carol Burnett's very famous.
Exactly, but I also realised that she has also been in Glee as Sue Sylvester's Nazi hunting mother.
Oh, okay. That would explain why I don't remember her being in Glee.
Yes.
I think I've blocked that plot line out of my head entirely because that was so strange.
And apparently she had a cameo in Toy Story 4. But I knew a lot more of these people than I thought. Also, there was the guy who you said I would know.
Yeah.
He was Zazu.
Yes, he's the voice of Zazu.
He's the inferior Zazu. He's not Rowan Atkinson, who is the one true Zazu.
Obviously, he's the voice of Zazu in the sequel movies. The
only thing about Simba's Pride I dislike...
Is the voice of Zazu.
Is the voice of
Does
Zazu.
Does he become American?
No, he sounds like he's trying to do a British voice.
Right.
It's noticeably a Rowan Atkinson impression.
Yeah. I don't know how they got some of the actual actors to come back for The Lion King 2, so...
Probably because it's quality.
No, but, like, generally, actors that sign on for big movies like that don't come back for sequels.
Yeah, so Matthew Broderick being involved in it was weird.
Yeah, that's why I think it's weird.
But, nonetheless, I love me Simba's Pride, with the exception of inferior Zazu.
Fair enough.
I do think the name of this is... It is what you get. It's The Princess and the Pea.
Yeah.
However, I do have an alternate
title. Excellent.
Oedipus the Musical.
Yes. And I thought you were going to bring that up because...
But kind of in reverse. It's not like...
Yeah, it's attachment. It's an attachment disorder, but the other way around. So yes. the queen in this, who is played by Carol Burnett, is called Queen Agravaine, which I think is the best name ever.
Yeah.
Which comes from an Arthurian... myth, interestingly.
Which we established last night. I do not know my Arthurian myth.
But it's... She has a very specific attachment to her son in that he dresses like a child, even though he's a grown man. The costumes that he's wearing at the beginning, he looks like he's in like underoos.
Oh, the costumes at the beginning just felt really awful. When next hers.
Who's? Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had a different costume designer just for her.
Which is very similar to Whoopi Goldberg from Cinderella, that you can tell her costume is a little bit more extravagant than everyone else's. But it was most noticeable at the very start when next to the princes, his costumes looked really inferior. And it made kind of the presentation seem cheap in comparison.
Yeah.
As it progressed, that disappeared. And I think that works within the narrative as he's slowly standing up to her more. Maybe he's more independent, dressing himself.
Dressing for Fred.
Yeah. Either way, it wasn't a consistent issue. I was really worried I was going to get bored of this because of poor costume design. That wasn't an issue throughout the rest of it. It was just really that first 10 minutes.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you want to quickly just run through what the plot of this was?
Yeah, I was... Essentially, they are trying to find him a wife.
Yes.
There is a marriage law in the land that says no one else can get married until the prince takes a wife to bed. So presumably the setting of his marriage day.
Yeah.
No one can get married. And we have Lady Larkin, who is in love and seeks to undermine that rule because she wants to get married to Mr. Shu.
Yeah.
Sir Harry is in line to become Prime Minister.
Yep.
And he's very headstrong on this, and that he must avoid a scandal. I'm thinking, wow, this is refreshing. A non-corrupt politician.
Yeah.
When suddenly we learn that he's Sir Harry the Immaculate Conception.
Yeah. Which one of my favourite jokes in this, which is it turns out that Lady Larkin, played by Zoe Deschanel, is pregnant. And he says something about it's...
her and her moment of weakness.
Yeah, it's not your fault. Like, I forgive you for your moment of weakness, which, like, okay, hon.
So...
takes two to tango and all that.
She needs to get married, otherwise she has to run away because the scandal of being an unwed mother.
Yes.
So they are setting about a plan to find a princess who is worthy of the prince.
Yeah.
Now, every princess that comes to the land must pass a test. I coined it, who wants to be a prince's bride?
Terrible.
So similar to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, if you didn't get that.
Yeah, I got it. We watched that Charles Ingram thing the other day or anything.
No, there's a test for each different princess.
Yes.
And as the plot goes on, it's very clear that this test isn't consistent. Ofsted would have a field day with the assessment policy of the Queen. She's basically coming up with unwinnable tests for these girls because she doesn't want her son to marry.
Yeah, basically.
And they've gone through all the neighbouring villages and kingdoms to look at all the best girls, and nothing's there. So she says, Sir Harry, no, we'll just wait until these girls have sisters who've grown up or daughters who've grown up.
And that'll take years.
It's very clear she just doesn't want her son to get married. She wants her son to be all hers.
Yeah.
And then hijinks ensue when Harry comes back with Winifred.
Yes. Oh, just after Winifred.
Yeah.
So this is the song, and you guessed it.
Yeah, Shy. She's certainly not. And that's the band's song. You can so see it. It's the most conventional musical in this one, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It is very much a overdone audition song.
Don't for the reason tell me not to fly, I simply that's can't. What I was wrong. It is. It's that style.
Yeah.
And I think it's notable within this, and I can see why a lot of actresses would latch themselves to that song as a big number, because if you were told to do a song from Once Upon a Mattress, there's nothing else I feel would make you stand out.
Maybe.
There are good songs, and I really like the songs.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything else that really showcases your range.
The Queen's song, I think.
Possibly.
Where she sings about how much she loves her son.
Yeah, that's one that could, but that's possibly one for an older performer.
Yeah.
Which may be why a lot of young performers wouldn't go that way.
Yeah, the reason that people audition with Shy is because it is a very character actor song.
Yes.
And you can put a lot of emotion and like range into that, and you can make her seem a bit crazy.
Well, she certainly is an unconventional princess.
Yes.
She's probably the sort of girl that the Queen has been having nightmares about.
She's exactly the sort of girl the Queen's been having nightmares
about. I will say this, that as dweebish as the Prince is at the start, because he's a total dweeb.
He is, yeah. At least mummy's boy.
At least he didn't say, "You're not like most girls."
Yes, I agree with that.
His flirting is instantly better.
I don't think he's been allowed to speak to most of the other girls.
No, I do think that there's some really good building of the romance between these two characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the flirting between Cinderella and Prince, Christopher, Rupert, Windermere, Vladimir, Carl, Alexander, Francois, Reginald, Lancelot, Herman, Gregory, James.
Yes, well done for remembering all of those names.
It's much better. And you feel like there is an actual genuine connection between these two as opposed to those two.
Yeah.
When he stands up at the end...
For himself, yeah.
It's more in line with this character because they've spent time together and actually do like each other's company. Yeah. He's grown accustomed to her face.
You're going to make that joke every week now.
Possibly. So, you're going to regret...
I hate it so much.
...showing me My Fair Lady.
I know.
But Shy is a great number.
Yeah.
And I think it does a really good job establishing Winifred's character.
Mm.
And this is definitely Sarah Jessica Parker around the time of Hocus Pocus. It's that character for her.
Yeah, so that's the link,
yeah.
I will say, is Cal Burnett and Tracy Ullman and Sarah Jessica Parker are all the unconventional princess type.
Yes.
They don't fit into the Disney-esque princess ideal,
yeah,
basically, of the time, which is the reason why this character is so great, is that she's not what you expect princesses to be like.
I did think, obviously, Hocus Pocus exists.
Yeah.
And the casting for that's perfect.
Yeah.
However, if you were shipping Hocus Pocus now as a feature...
Yeah.
Those three actresses would be perfect for those three roles. Yeah, like Sarah Jessica Parker as her role.
Yeah. But
Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
And Tracy Ullman would also fit into the roles of those witches brilliantly.
But just Kathy and Jimmy is so great.
Yeah.
As her witch. And you can't get rid of Bette Midler.
No, and I know you can't. And I'm not saying I would.
Bette Midler.
I'm not saying I would ever get rid of Bette Midler.
But
however, my point is you could see the three of them being...
Yeah,
a great trio on screen together,
but
with those witches.
I love Bette Midler.
Yeah. Who doesn't love Bette Midler? The Wizard.
Yeah. So this is one of the changes. He's called the Wizard, obviously, and that's what he's billed as for the film. At no point does he do anything vaguely wizardy or useful.
No.
But in the stage show, he is the Queen's version of the Jester.
Yes.
But she believes that he can do magic and he's shown to be a bit of a charlatan.
The Wizard does remind me of Ricky Gervais in Extras when he plays the genie. And I showed you the GIF.
Yeah.
And that's all I could think of. I think I felt like the King, the Jester and the Wizard could have done more.
Yeah. So in the, again, change, in the stage show, there is an extra character called the Minstrel,
yes,
and he is essentially the narrator,
yes,
or she, it didn't really matter the gender of that character, and they're the one that sings the opening song, and throughout the story, the Minstrel, the Jester, and the King are all sort of together, and they're his interpreters, but also the Minstrel can step away to interpret for us, as the audience, what's happening in the show. The Minstrel and the Wizard have a conflict, which is that the minstrel as the narrator is kind of all-knowing.
Yeah.
And the wizard is pretending to be. And that they have their own little conflicts. The king, the minstrel, the jester, and the wizard all have their own subplot that isn't in this.
Yeah, and that's probably the fat that was trimmed for this.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's a song called The Minstrel, the Jester, and I, which is sung by the king in inverted phrases.
See, I liked that. I really liked the jokes and the humour that came from the king communicating...
Almost sign language.
Almost sign language.
Yeah.
Basically charades.
Yeah.
And the Jester had such a cool design as a character, like his little staff with his head on, and he looks at it and he raises his eyes like, uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Yeah, here we go again.
This was a character I'd have loved to have seen more from, and he never really got anything. And it's really funny because there's a scene later on where Mr. Shu and Zooey Deschanel are going to help cheat the test. And they bump into the Jester, and the Jester shouts, Sir Harry! And Sir Harry shouts, Jester! He doesn't even have a name.
No, he's the Jester.
And it's great, but I felt so bad. I'd love to have seen more of this character.
Yeah.
Just because the moments he was there were really interesting, and I liked it. I'd love to have seen more.
Hmm.
But we get Sensitivity.
Yep.
Which is the exposition song.
Yes, that is the evil plot song.
Now, my question is this. The Queen has been suffering a lumpy mattress.
Yeah.
And she's at her wit's end. And she can readily summon 20 brand new mattresses. Why has she not done this already?
I think the point is she's a drama queen. She hasn't actually been suffering. She just likes to be made a fuss of. Because earlier on, she talks about her nerves in the same way as Mrs. Bennet in Pride and Prejudice. And, you know, oh, my poor nerves, they shake so. And there's actually nothing wrong with her. And her mattress is fine. She probably sleeps absolutely fine. She just likes to make a big deal of it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We all know that sort of person. We do. I'm sure you know somebody. I'm sure you know somebody.
You mean
the listeners will know somebody who makes a mountain out of a molehill. I am not talking about you. But I'm sure everyone knows that
so
sort of person.
Mean to me.
I really do like the way their relationship develops, and when they're meeting the king, it's funny, especially how he's miming everything, goes to pull down his trousers, and everyone's like, no, we don't need
to
see
that.
To show
that he got bitten. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some really funny moments there, and you point out one of your favourite lines.
My absolute favourite line in this whole movie, which is, she's already met the queen, and then she meets the king. And as the king leaves, she turns to Dauntless and says, well, I certainly like almost both of your parents.
Yeah, and that's such a good line.
Yeah.
And they have a song.
Yep.
Where I thought, is she magic? Because she summons a storm when she goes outside. So this must be the Swamps of Home.
Yes, it is.
There were some really nice, awkward moments with this. Like, she's singing Blood and the prince joins in on Blood. But it's weird. It's that weird kind of trope in musicals where someone sings and everyone knows the words. It's that non-diegetic sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always weird when that happens. And what I liked is that Fred kind of gave a look at him to be like, what are you doing? And then he was like, okay.
Oh, cool. That was nice. Yeah.
And it was almost like a knowing glance that this was silly.
Yeah. There's a lot of that where people join in on songs and they sort of nod at each other like, oh, yeah.
And the handmaidens were great in that scene as well. The choreography for that one was really good.
Yeah.
I liked that one. But it just made the prince such a dweeb as well.
He's such a dweeb. It's cute, though. He's so sheltered.
He is.
And then compared with Fred, who is so wild, it's nice to see it happen that way round.
It's very interesting because I'd say he's got the traditionally princess role and she's got the traditionally prince role.
Definitely.
I really like the scene earlier on where he's Bella in New Moon. And he's just sat out the window as the seasons pass.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really nice scene. It just shows that he's this kind of sheltered lover boy in love with the idea of love, but no idea what it actually is until
he meets Fred.
Until he meets Fred. We see them playing croquet and he's got no idea what to do.
Yeah. Which, if they own all this croquet equipment, why doesn't he know how to play croquet?
Exactly. So they play croquet and the ball...
Yep.
Flies past the queen.
And lands in the front. Yeah.
And he goes, we're playing croquet, Mama. She touched my mallet. Very excited.
She's amazing. Yeah.
And they establish that the prince is giving a ball.
Yep. Of course.
And we're going to have the Spanish panic.
Yes. The hardest dance in the known world. The most exhausting dance.
True.
Yes.
Do you know the Spanish Panic?
It's only my favourite dance.
It's just a really nice moment. I liked that joke so much.
I always wonder, like, Is it actually her favourite dance, or is it just...
She knows the routine, so she
knows the whole dance, yeah.
I thought it was going to be a fake dance. I didn't realise there was an actual thing called the Spanish Panic within this world.
Yep.
The world is very weird.
Yes.
So it's a medieval world.
Mm-hmm.
And Zooey Deschanel is insistent that she's having twins. Now, I don't think this world is set up to scientifically prove and back up her claim that she's having twins.
Now... You said this, so you're talking about In a Little While,
yes.
Which is the song that Sir Harry and Lady Larkin sing, in which there is a lyric that is...
one, two, three, and four.
Yeah. In a little while, just a little while, you and I will be one, two, three, four. Now, I don't think she's actually saying that they're having two children. I think she's saying, you and I will be one, two, three, and then the next line starts with... four, but it has to rhyme, so she just does one, two, three, four.
I know, but it sounds like they're having fun. Unless she means the dog, which is your dream.
Yep.
Rather it sounds like she's having twins, but I don't think she was ever pregnant.
But they make allusions to the fact that she's gained weight throughout.
She doesn't look like
she doesn't look like she does.
She doesn't look. I think she's
lying. So they.
I think, as Admiral Akbar would say, it's a trap.
Yeah.
Right. And she's simply trying to light a fire under Sir Harry so he actually does something and marries her.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she's just having, like, extra food, you know, at the feasts.
Maybe.
I don't think she's pregnant.
I think she is. Because I really like that plot line of...
What, that plot line that exists just as a MacGuffin to kind of introduce Winifred?
Yeah.
Do they get more kind of padding in...
In this, yeah, Broadway they do show. Get more padding.
Because they're kind of non-existent characters. Like, they're set up to maybe be our main characters and then they disappear.
Mm.
And then they come back conveniently to help Winifred cheat.
So, around this time, in specifically Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals, there was always the lead characters, so in this case, Fred and Dauntless, and the sub-characters who are also in love.
Yeah.
So in this, Sir Harry and Lady Larkin, and their story is supposed to parallel the main lover's story.
That's...
With this one, it's been taken away a little bit, but it's supposed to be that it's so easy for Dauntless to find a wife. Like, there's really no issue there except for that his mother disagrees. Whereas for Larkin and Harry, they physically cannot be together.
Which, what I thought was interesting... This is almost like a commedia dell'arte trope, that you would always have the main lovers who are elegant, and you'd have the secondary lovers who are kind of clumsy.
Yeah.
And you've also got the Arlecchino character who traditionally falls in love with the Arlecchino character is James Corden in One Man, Two Governors.
Oh, right, okay, the four.
So you've got, you've kind of got like three sets of lovers.
Right.
Okay. You've got the main lovers, who are usually the elegant ones who conduct themselves properly, and the secondary lovers, who are a little bit silly.
Yeah, in which case Harry and Larkin are the main lovers.
Which is what I thought was interesting, that the trope here is that your kind of silly lovers are the secondary ones, but they're the main focus here.
Yeah.
Because everything about Fred and the prince is unconventional, and you get the more comical moments there. So from a commedia dell'arte perspective, it's a very interesting use of their tropes and style.
That's super interesting.
But also reversal. I love me my commedia dell'arte.
I don't know enough about it.
It was my final performance style at university.
Yeah.
And it's a really fun style.
Okay.
So we get the Spanish Panic.
Yeah.
The choreography is brilliant. And the orchestral arrangement for that was so much fun too.
Mm-hmm. The changing of musical styles within one song.
Yes.
It's so great.
I really liked that one.
Yeah.
Song of Love, I'm assuming, is I'm in love with a girl named Fred.
Yes.
Now, that song is preceded by the worst clean and jerk I have ever seen. And I used to do CrossFit, and I'm not good at doing clean and jerk.
Explain what that means for me.
It's...
Is that when she lifts the weight?
Yeah, it's a weightlifting movement.
It's not a real weight. It's made of, like, polystyrene.
She could have still shown the form. She's going to seriously injure her back doing it that way. There's going to be... That's why she couldn't sleep. It wasn't an issue with the pee. It was the fact that she buggered her back from a really bad clean and jerk.
Uh-huh.
I've been there. I did CrossFit for 4-month period. Uh-huh. So I'm an expert. I know what I'm talking about here. And my form was atrocious, and I would go to bed frequently aching.
Okay.
I'm in Love with a Girl Named Fred is a really, really good song.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's really over the top, and it reminded me of a very Family Guy style that I can imagine Walter Murphy's probably been quite inspired by this.
Yes. Anytime you bring up Family Guy or attributed animated movies, it always just... You're always going to get that noise from me, because obviously these came first.
I know they did, and I'm not saying that this is stolen from Family Guy. Obviously it hasn't. What I'm saying is it's nice for me to kind of piece things together and maybe see what's influenced things that I watch.
Yeah.
And that song especially was almost like what I expected a Rodgers and Hammerstein to be.
Yeah.
When we were watching Cinderella, I was expecting more songs in that style.
Mm.
But it's also maybe not as serious as I'd expect Rodgers and Hammerstein. It's like that amalgamation of Rodgers' daughter taking her dad's style, but maybe putting her own spin on it.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was something I really liked. And I can see maybe how it's resonated with musicians since.
Mm.
As I say, I will always refer to things like Family Guy and The Simpsons and maybe even South Park. Simply because... That's where my background is. That's things I've seen, and that's the media that I've processed up until this point. And more of it will make sense as a result of seeing these.
Yeah.
Because I know that The Simpsons are clearly big fans of, you know, this background. You look at all the parodies they've done. Same with Family Guy. Seth MacFarlane's got a Broadway background, and obviously Trey Parker and Matt Stone must love musicals, because look at Book of Mormon. It's a love letter to different shows.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this journey is really nice, because I'm actually starting to see maybe what inspired these people.
Yeah.
I'm not ever going to say that, you know, I'm never going to be ignorant enough to say, well, this came first. I know that what we're seeing here predates everything. It's just interesting for me to make that observation.
Mm.
However, your math skills.
No.
Your math skills.
There's a portion of this film where Dauntless is trying to help Fred study for the test. And one of the things that they study is maths. And she has to times, is it
17? It's 17 times 3.
17 times 3, right.
And what's her answer?
24.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is...
However, I am very dyslexic and dyscalculic, and watching her work it out on the screen, I was like, is she actually wrong?
Which or is, and
has she worked it out wrong? Or because she's just written numbers down, and they just look like squiggles to me, so.
And I am not laughing at you.
You're 100%
laughing. I'm not. I think the way she sells it, she even convinces the prince.
Yeah, because he goes, well, the book must be wrong.
And exactly. Just like, and I can't blame... Because I'd imagine that you saw this when you were younger for the first time.
Yeah.
So, you know, younger Drew has watched this and thought, oh, she must be right. How working out? And she's so committed.
My maths always been bad.
She's so committed that she's right. Like, I always say that if people genuinely think they're right, they'll convince others that they're wrong.
Hmm.
Even if they are wrong. It's that confidently incorrect thing.
Yeah.
And her logic...
Me, always.
Her logic makes sense. I just love that my notes have the sum, just to say to you, no, Drew, it's 51.
Not 24, yeah.
So, she's a little off with that one.
Don't know why they let me teach children. It's beyond me.
Let's just say, for those wondering at home, Drew is not a maths teacher.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a maths teacher.
One of the things I thought was really nice in this is how Cinderella, Snow White and Rapunzel exist in this universe.
Yep.
I don't think they exist.
And we hate all of them.
We do, because they got it too easy. They had someone there to help them, and I've got no one. I like the idea that they're not fairy tales, that they are real people. Like that celebrity gossip.
Yeah.
That she must see Snow White in the gossip columns.
Yeah. Well, Cinderella had a fairy godmother. So...
Where's my fairy godmother?
Yeah, when she probably didn't. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And I like Snow White has 7 devoted men. She probably didn't. The bit where she hangs her hair out and is like, oh, it probably hurts. Bloody hell.
Yeah, it hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Which I like, because I've always thought that. There is no way you could pull somebody up with your hair. And I like that every version of Rapunzel in media has a hook to hang her hair over.
Yeah.
Because, as if that's going to help. No. I just like that they call Rapunzel out for her hair.
What satisfaction canst Fred have tonight?
So, you laughed at that in the... Well, none, because she's not going to sleep.
Yeah.
You laughed at that joke, and then the Queen reprises it later on.
Oh, I love it. The Queen reprises it because... Well, she's naturally going to be a little bit more satisfied. She's just had a little pee in Fred's bed.
Lame. I was waiting for the pee joke.
And I've been waiting. I thought that was the one.
Ugh.
So one of the things I always talk to you about, and maybe to others, is positive realization or positive actualization.
Yes.
That if we... imagine something's going to happen, it will happen, as opposed to, you know, it might. And the king puts this into practice because he corrects the prince when you marry Fred, not if.
Mm.
And that's good. I like that. Some good parenting going on from the king.
Yeah.
He can't speak and he's a better parent.
Mm-hmm.
I think the queen genuinely loves her son.
Yeah.
And I think
she thinks she's doing the right thing.
Yeah. And she's not a villain by typical villain standards. She is the villain of this because she's the barrier. But it doesn't come from a malicious place. It comes from a place of love.
Yeah.
So I really like that. And we then get the prince asking his father to give him the birds and the bees talk.
Yeah.
And I have decided that when I have to deliver this talk to our children, I will be doing it in the exact way that the king does it.
Through mime.
Through mime.
Right. Interpretive dance.
Now, Dennis O'Hare.
Yeah.
Was 43 at the time of filming this. He's a grown
man, yeah.
How old do you reckon the prince is at this point? Is he the same age that Dennis O'Hare is?
No. I always assumed that the prince is, like, in his 30s. Because I've never seen a version where he's played by a young-looking actor. He's supposed to look like a grown man.
And that's funnier for it. And it makes a lot more sense why you'd have Tracy Ullman as opposed to... Zoe Deschanel in this,
yes.
Because the ages are not right. And it's so refreshing for him to have an older,
age-appropriate
girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yes, he's not going to fall in love with the 20-year-old.
Yeah.
He's falling in love with somebody who might even be a little bit older than he is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really nice.
Yeah, especially because they're the older lovers, and then you've got older being the loose term.
Yeah.
And then you've got Zoe Deschanel and Mr. Schuster, who are the young lovers in this, because he's in his 20s in this.
Yeah.
He's a young man.
Oh, yeah. He's not Mr. Shu here. He's Mr. Young.
Yeah. He's a baby.
He is. Very baby-faced. Definitely. But, yeah, really like how protected the prince is, because he's saying to his dad, he's like, so what actually happens? What's the point of being married? He has no idea. He's going to have a shock in a few nights' time.
Yeah, and his dad explains to him the sort of mime version of the birds and the bees talk, and then does a mime of the stork, and he says, oh, yeah, Mum told me about the stork ages ago, I know all about that. And then he suddenly has this realisation of, like, oh, no, wait, the stork's not real. Which, do you think people still tell their kids that?
I don't know.
I wonder if that's, like, an outdated practice now.
I think it's a difficult one to do, because how do you approach that subject with a child?
My mum told me, like, straight out that babies come from their mum's tummies.
But is that because...
It's like the loose version of...
Is that because you were old enough when she was pregnant with Jake to ask those questions?
I was two.
You were two. Okay, so you weren't old enough for that. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I don't remember being told anything. I don't know if I've ever had the talk. How does it work?
I'm not explaining it to you.
If you explain it to me, please do it through mine.
Yeah. If you don't know, I'm not telling you.
But I really like the next song, which is Mr. Shu singing to Lady Larkin.
Yeah.
It's a really sweet romantic song.
Normandy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's singing about where they're going to go for their honeymoon.
Has she been locked up at this point? She's just rescued her.
No, she is... So, Lady Larkin was locked up in the dungeon because the Queen saw her sort of eavesdropping on what the test was going to be. Then Fred comes downstairs to try and find her way to the kitchens.
Yes.
Doesn't find the kitchen, finds the dungeon where Lady Larkin is, unlocks Lady Larkin's door, and then she gets taken away by the wizard. So Lady Larkin sneaks out and then runs into Harry.
Yeah.
And then they have time to sing this song.
He is the worst knight that has ever been. It's terrible.
He can't stand up in his armour.
Well, it's not because he can't stand up in his armour. His job is to protect the realm. Yes. Yeah. The size of that moon in the background, there is going to be a tsunami of some sort.
Yeah.
He should be raising an alarm, not singing to his bride-to-be. Aww. He's going to be an awful father.
Their song's cute.
Oh, it's a cute song, but duty first, Drew. Duty first.
Interestingly, Normandy is one of the songs that is supposed to be sung by the minstrel.
Oh, really?
But Sir Harry isn't involved in it at all. It's the minstrel, the jester, Lady Larkin, and the king.
Oh, okay.
Singing about how lovely Normandy is this time of year.
That is very weird.
Yeah. It also is supposed to take place in Act 1, and we're on Act 2 now.
Yeah, but I've got the song list in front of me, and I can see that Normandy is before the Spanish Panic, and I'm like, no, it wasn't. Yeah. I swear Normandy was later. The wizard has a little pee, which amuses the queen.
Yep.
It's a very good relationship that he can just pee in front of her.
Mm-hmm. Ha, 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 ha. Over and over again. Yeah, so... And,
yeah, they plant the pee...
Mm-hmm.
And then they summon her up and they get her in bed.
Yeah.
And she introduces the wizard now as a songbird.
The Nightingale of Samarkand.
Now, this was a much better bird than Zazu.
Yeah.
Much better. I believed this bird more. And she throws him out of the cage.
She hates it. So they give her a drink, which is... some kind of opioid mixed with...
It's basically designed to make her go to sleep. Yeah. So there's no question about it.
They've tied her out with the dance. Then she's got drunk with the prince.
Yes.
Then they give her this opioid mixed with milk. And then they have this bird sing to her. And the bird is so annoying that she just kicks him out. Because it's the wizard dressed as a bird.
Yeah, and we see her... thrashing about on the bed, unable to get comfortable.
Mm.
And there's one spot in particular that she's most...
annoyed by.
Yeah. I had no idea about the final reveal that we get later on, that it's stuffed with the armoury. She has this great line going, what do you store in your mattresses? The armoury?
That's just jousting equipment. Yeah.
And sure enough, it was there.
Yeah.
But even after that sort of move, she could still feel that pee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice that she's sensing that area that it's at, and she thrashes about. I didn't have a good night's sleep last night. I really resonated with the character of Fred in this moment, because that was me last night.
She's screaming.
Yes, it's that internal screaming, and she tries counting sheep. That doesn't work. What is your go-to tactic when you can't sleep? What do you try and do? Do you count sheep, or...?
I flip the duvet over.
Okay.
So that the cold side that's been in the air is on me, and then I go back to
sleep. And you do that with the pillow as well, that's what I do.
Yeah, I flip my pillow and do
this. So you don't count in your head or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
But I can turn dreams back on, so I don't need to.
That's fair.
I can sleep anywhere. I could literally lie down on the floor in our living room right now and just go to sleep.
Yes.
I'd be fine.
So you don't count sheep or anything?
No. Usually I just play music.
What do you mean play music? Like, in your head, you just imagine songs?
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
But, so, blow the minds of people who listen to this, but there is this thing called aphantasia, and the opposite of it is hyperphantasia. So aphantasia is when you cannot picture things in your head.
Yes.
But it also extends to music, so you can't hear music in your head.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Insane to me, because I can hear, if I am imagining songs, I can hear what the music sounds like. Like, I can actually hear it.
Yeah, same. If I was to think of a Book of Mormon song right now, I can hear it in my song.
Yeah.
I can hear it in my head, not my song.
But, so my mum specifically has aphantasia. She cannot see anything. When she closes her eyes and pictures an image, she can't see anything.
So can she not?
No.
Hear songs either.
She can't do songs either.
Oh, wow.
And it's crazy to me that happens. But if I need to get back to sleep, I'll just put some music on in my head.
Is there a particular thing you go to? I have a similar technique. What's your song?
Either Dream a Little Dream of Me, Mums and Puppers, because that's what my mum sang to me when I was a baby.
Dream a Little Dream is great as well.
That's a good song.
But no, just because you're trying to get to sleep, so dreaming dreams.
Or the Pas de Deux from the Nutcracker.
Fair. I've told you my one before that I sing to myself. Do you remember it?
Is it? I don't know.
It's the Pokemon theme.
Oh, God. No, you haven't told me
that. I have told you that. I sing the original Pokemon theme. I do something very similar when I'm struggling to get to sleep with the counting sheep. It's not quite counting sheep, though. Mm. Basically, what I try and do... Oh, it's so lame, but, I mean, you've shared yours.
Yeah.
I go from the current WWE champion and try and go as far back as to who the current champion is, who they want it from, who they want it from, who they want it from, and I can get...
Oh, like who they'd be.
Yeah.
That's quite cool.
And I can get as far back from... 2020
yeah.
with Drew McIntyre, I can get as far back as 1996 with Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart.
Does that happen every year? Somebody gets beaten?
I mean, it happens. It can happen like once a week. There was a period of time, and this is where it's really confusing. There's a period of time back when I was at university, so it must have been 2009. The belt went between John Cena,
yeah,
who you know of Total Bellas fame.
Excellent.
And Randy Orton, yeah, like twice a month. So in my head is literally John Cena, Randy Orton, John Cena, Randy Orton, John Cena, Randy Orton. And that's the period of time where I've really got to think. That's the only period that it kind of doesn't work for me. So I really think that I've not counted them too much.
Yeah.
That's my technique. Similar to sheep,
I guess. So the thing with her counting, I do not understand counting sheep.
It's supposed to be monotonous. I remember
being told about this as a child and trying it and being like, this doesn't work. And I'm sure it doesn't work for everyone. However, I really like that in this, she turns her head to count. And she goes from right to left. So she looks to the right to see the sheep.
Yeah.
And then he jumps across the fence in front of her and is gone. And then she has to turn back to the right to get the next sheep.
And that's what I used to do. I used to count sheep. And in my mind...
Did you physically move your head then?
No, I move my eyes. So I'm literally like imagining... So my pupil goes from here and I go over like one.
That's like forced REM though.
Yeah. And that's it's essentially, to my idea of it, it's supposed to kick start your sleep cycle.
Yeah.
You're doing something monotonous, so it focuses your brain.
Yeah.
You're kind of, there's nothing else on it bar counting. And it's the eye movement. It's supposed to kind of like trigger it. I could be wrong. I'm not a scientist. I've got a C in science. My weakest of the subjects.
Not a science teacher.
We know what I'm not. We know that I am a drama teacher.
Yeah.
A drama teacher who's not seen any musicals, apparently.
Yeah.
But...
And we're all having a good laugh about it.
Yeah. I used to do the counting sheep, and it's a very good depiction of how I would count sheep, but she's a lot more animated with it. I just do it with my eyes.
Mm.
She does it with her whole body.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's a really nice little joke that I think everyone can relate to. And because this sequence goes on as long as we've been talking about it,
yes,
you do feel pained for
her. You feel
bad for her. It's the worst sensation of lying in bed, physically tired, but unable to drift off.
Mm.
And you feel that agony in Tracy Ullman in this.
Yeah. You know, does a good job with it.
She's in different positions. She sits up. She grunts. She's just frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And she must be physically exhausted as well as mentally because she's been drugged.
Yeah, basically.
This must be painful. And I got the sense that it was painful.
And then the next morning, we have Dauntless's best costume, which is his wedding costume, which is gorgeous. It's like white medieval costume with like a fur-lined cape. And it's all just gorgeous. And then they're all in the Grand Hall waiting for the test to begin. And the Queen reveals that the test's already happened.
Yeah. And
she thinks Fred's failed.
Well, she's pretty certain that she's failed because the whole idea...
she's not there.
But also, it's essentially a really easy test to say you failed. Like, this is one of her most genius plans ever is...
That's a good one.
You know, if you don't sleep, you're truly a princess because everyone's going to sleep, especially because she's piled on insurmountable odds.
Yeah.
All she's going to say was there was a pee, which nobody in their right mind would notice.
Yeah.
And
I would, because I'm a genuine princess.
You are a genuine princess. And I reckon there's two people in this world I think would genuinely notice. You and Laurie.
Yeah.
Because Laurie is also a princess.
Laurie is an actual genuine princess.
But she's so certain of it because there's no way
anyone would can... notice that.
Yeah, and yeah. she would have said, this is her calling shenanigans on the whole affair.
Yeah.
And the prince looks absolutely heartbroken.
No. This is the moment in which you kind of realise actually he does love her.
Yeah. This isn't the same as like Cinderella. Yeah, it's not the same as Cinderella and Prince Charming singing, "Do I love you because you're beautiful?" This is genuine. This is true yeah. love. This is nothing fake like theirs.
Yeah. And then French shows up.
Counting up to 37,439. And the Queen says, 37,439 what?
She says sheep.
Sheep, of course. I haven't slept. What do you keep the blooming armoury in that bed?
Yeah. And the Queen just jumps up and is like, "You passed. That was the test. You passed."
And the Queen just looks.
She's so angry.
Not angry as such.
You didn't sleep?
Yeah, more just shell shocked.
Yeah.
And everyone's happy because
they live
forever together and everyone else can get married.
Yeah. But we take it to be true in this universe. That a genuine princess would feel a pee under the mattress.
Yes.
Because the Queen tells us that that's like a standard thing. And she doesn't believe that Fred is sensitive enough to be a princess.
We got one of my favourite lines in the whole show here.
Yeah.
She asks the prince to find a new kingdom.
Mm.
Feeling we won't want to live with the in-laws.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And the Queen tries to...
Talk him out of it.
You know, wait. Don't do anything
like, yet. You might not be in love with her. See if it blows over, kind of thing.
And he stands up for himself.
Yay!
And she does this really good thing where one eye shuts and the other eye is wide open.
Yeah, Carol Burnett has the best facial expression.
And clutches her throat.
Yeah.
And the jester shouts... It's the curse!
Yeah, so earlier on in the show we were explained that the king can't speak because there was a curse put on him that can only be broken when the mouse devours the hawk. And
which is such a weird little riddle.
Yeah, and then it turns out that the mouse is Dauntless and the hawk is his mother.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
I really wanted the king's first words to be a declaration of love for the jester.
Yeah, because they are so cute.
They are a very cute couple.
They're the best couple.
And the king has a voice I did not expect.
No, doesn't his voice... I said this when it happens yeah. in the movie. His voice is exactly the same as Dauntless's.
Yeah, it's very weird.
And he doesn't... It doesn't sound like it should be coming out of his face.
No. And he essentially tells her to... hop, skip and jump her way and do whatever he says and that they'll be wedded as soon as possible. Yep. They're going to start the preparations and they walk off triumphant and the wizard...
tries to buy his way back in.
Might I say you are the most beautiful royal there is.
Yeah.
Preservation.
King has no time for that though.
No. And it's marriage for everyone.
Yay!
And we get our finale song where it's revealed that everything... bar the kitchen sink
was inside the mattresses, yeah.
And it's a nice moment. So she goes back to sleep there and she climbs up. And even after everything's been removed, she still says, "I can't get to sleep yet." And they remove this pee.
And then she'd go to sleep.
Fair enough. I know I couldn't sleep in a bed that had a little pee in it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it convenient?
Terrible.
Isn't it convenient, though, that he knows the exact mattress...
It's and under placement the bottom one.
Of it wasn't under the bottom one. It was like
okay, Carol Burnett put it under the bottom one.
Okay, well it wasn't under the bottom one when he got it. But wasn't it amazing that he just straight away knew I'm gonna put my hand in this exact place and take the yeah. pee. If this was real life, they'd have had to strip the bed, take every mattress off,
yeah.
and hunt for this pee.
Yeah, in real life, you wouldn't be able to get your hand under a mattress if there's 20 more on no, top of it. But it's a fairy tale.
It is. It was a fun fairy tale. Good. Something that definitely didn't take itself too seriously.
So you enjoyed it?
I enjoyed it.
Yay, good.
Who is your... I think I know who you're going to say with this. Who is your favourite?
My favourite character's Fred.
Yeah, my favourite character's Fred, but I think my favourite character, my favourite performer was Carol Burnett here.
Yeah.
I think...
Oh, like MVP?
Yeah.
Yeah, Carol Burnett.
I think Fred is great. Sometimes it's a little too eccentric pixie dreamboat girlfriend.
Hmm, maybe.
And I don't mind that.
I don't think she's set up to be like that, though.
But so, sometimes it's just a little too much that way.
Mm-hmm.
She's almost... And it's fine, and I like that. But I do think that the Queen, whilst being OTT, is still sometimes quite real.
Yeah.
And I like that about her character, that you can have a real person exist with this grandiose stature.
Yeah.
My favourite song I wrote down is I'm in Love with a Girl Named Fred. I didn't know the name of it, but that was
yeah, the Song of Love.
It's a really fun song.
Yeah, it is.
What?
F-R-E-D Fred.
F-R-E-D.
F-R-E-D Fred.
Fred.
I like that too.
What is that your favourite song?
No, my favourite song is In a Little While.
Is that the opening kind of song between Mr. Shu?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cute song.
That song gets stuck in my head more than any other one does.
Yeah.
That and Shy. I like Shy.
Shy is good. I like all of them. I think Shy is definitely like showstopper number that really showcases what this character can do.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because she's so different than anything this world knows.
Yeah.
That's fun. I think I know what your least favourite song is.
What?
Man to Man Talk.
Yes.
It hardly qualifies as a song.
No, and I think if you... Like, that song could go.
You know, looking at the song list... That whole
scene could go. It doesn't advance the plot.
It doesn't. But what it is good at is actually demonstrating this relationship between...
The king
and the prince. Because there's nothing else otherwise. And it's quite nice to have father-son time.
Yeah.
Within this world, especially because of the way the king supports him against the queen at the end. I feel it would be very sudden to just have him be like, well, actually, everything's wrong. You know full well going into it that he backs this marriage, and if only he had a voice.
Yeah.
If he only had a voice. Doo-doo, doo-doo, doo-doo. So I think it is an important scene, and I don't think you can have this story end the way it does without it. Maybe in the full feature Broadway show you could cut it, but within the 90-minute production that we watched, the 90-minute TV film we watched, we have to have it to make sense. I could say that The Nightingale Lullaby is my least favourite song, but it's hardly a song. It doesn't really count. It's designed to be really bad. I don't think there's any songs here that I would say are bad. And I wouldn't say there are any songs that I found offensive. So I don't have a least favourite song.
Cool.
I think they were all fun.
Yeah.
They all played their part and they were enjoyable. Like I was tapping along to each of them.
Mm.
But the one that stood out most for me was, I'm in love with a girl named Fred.
Yeah. If you could be a character in this, who would you want to be?
I have currently left this blank.
Yeah. I think I know what you're going to... say.
What do you think I'm going to say?
I think you're going to say that you would like to play the king because it'd be fun to play the silent character, but that isn't who you would pick.
I was going to say, actually, that there's no kind of fun male roles in this.
I think Dauntless could ham it up a bit more.
I think Dauntless is great in this.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a role I would like.
You have to play somebody.
I have to play somebody, and I get that.
You have to pick someone.
I would say, I mean, Dauntless is good.
Mm-hmm.
Within the version we watched, none of the men really stand out. I'm going to say it'd be interesting. The way you were describing the full Broadway show.
Yeah.
Playing the wizard would be quite an interesting role.
Yeah.
Because you're this hack. And that's always quite fun that you're this... villain sidekick who wants to be more than what he is and is trying to hide his flaws. So I'd possibly say the wizard.
Yeah.
Why not?
Sure. That's a good one.
It is a good one. Overall, I gave this 4 stars.
Nice.
I did really like this one. It's interesting that we've gone from one being at times too long last week.
Yeah.
I'm going to say for the record, and we're recording this a week after watching all three Very Potter musicals.
Yeah.
I do think I was very negative on that experience at times.
That's probably because we were sat there for about 1,000 hours.
Yeah, I think had we structured it that maybe Friday is Potter musical, mm-hmm. Saturday was sequel, and Sunday was senior year.
Yeah.
Maybe
we binge watched it,
and I don't think it was the way to do it. I think on hindsight and on reflection, especially the way that my mind has been on Potter musical this week, I think I was a lot harsher on that experience than I should have been.
Yeah.
I think I actually, in hindsight, yeah, a lot of my comments still stand, that I still do think Draco's Rowling is a little self-indulgent at times, as well as other things like the diaper story is a little too much, and maybe sometimes the actors are too self-indulgent. Yeah. However, it's those moments that have stuck with me more and have made me laugh this week when kind of I've just thought about it and I've just laughed.
Yeah.
And in tweeting and Instagramming about a Very Potter musical, mm-hmm. and seeing the fan art that people have produced from it, the GIFs.
Yep.
It's made me feel a lot fonder about it. And I think maybe if I...
What did you give A Very Potter Musical?
So I said 3 stars for the first one, 3 stars for the second one, 4 stars for senior year, and 4 stars overall, because...
So the same as this?
Yeah, and I think... I do think that I was harsher in my commentary on it than I feel about it now, especially having listened to the episode and editing it.
Mm.
For the record, I did really like...
For future reference, anything that we're going to watch where there's multiple movies, we're not going to be watching them back to back.
Which is really good, because I know that that's always been your plan for High School Musical and the Annies.
High School Musical, watching all of them back to back.
Yeah.
You have no choice in
But I do think...
But spoiler, Annie's, we're not.
Spoiler alert. I'm not excited for High School Musical as is.
Yeah.
That's the reason why we've not done it yet. There's two reasons. Firstly,
we're going to have a guest.
Secondly, I am already biased about it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
We'll talk about it. But
one day, when we get there.
I do think that's one that, if we don't want a really negative experience, we need to structure it.
Mm-hmm.
That we're not watching all three in one day.
You're going to love it.
For the record, I enjoyed Potter Musical a great deal.
Good.
And I know I was sometimes critical of that going too long. And I think I'm a little critical of this going too short, because I wanted to see more of these characters. That's what stops it being 5 star for me. Mm. I would like to see more of the king. I'd like to see more of the wizard. I'd like to see more of the jester. I'd like to see more of Sir Harry and Lady Larkin. The characters here have the potential to be really interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to hold it against the whole thing.
That says...
The lack of character depth, because you're confined to Disney saying, we're only going to give you 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
With what they presented was great.
Yeah.
Had it had 15 minutes, maybe more.
That says a lot about your enjoyment of it, I think.
Yeah.
That you wanted to see more of the characters.
Exactly. And... You know, it may seem petty to say 4 stars when I am as positive about this one, but I think for me that's something that was sorely missing, but not enough to dampen the mood.
Yeah. So you gave it 4 stars?
I gave it 4 stars.
And you enjoyed it?
I enjoyed it.
Good.
What is the agenda for next week?
Next week we are going to be watching The Producers.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's Mel Brooks.
No.
Is it not Mel Brooks?
No. It's Matthew Broderick.
No, but Mel Brooks was creative team for it, wasn't he?
I don't know.
I'm pretty certain Mel Brooks' name comes up in conversations with the producers.
Oh, yeah. Mel Brooks, producer.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Perhaps I'm the expert on this one for next week.
I don't think you are.
No.
Somehow. We've got the introduction of my favourite musical actor next week.
Matthew Broderick.
Not Matthew Broderick.
Will Ferrell's in it.
Yeah, he is. It's not him either.
But Will Ferrell plays a Nazi in it.
Yes, he does.
So this is, we'll talk about it more, but this is set in the backdrop of World War II Germany.
No, it's not.
Is it not? Oh, I'm so super interested. This is something I've heard good things about for years.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I've never watched it.
It's so good and so funny. And I feel like saying this is going to be like detrimental because if you don't like it, but so it also came out in 2005.
Yes, I remember seeing it promoted.
Mm-hmm. And I think it is hilarious. I think it's really well made. It's the only film I've ever liked Will Ferrell in because I don't find him particularly funny, but in this, he's great.
Oh, I've got a great idea for a bonus episode where we maybe look at some different Will Ferrell musical moments.
No.
I know who does like Will Ferrell. Is your brother. He likes Step Brothers.
Yeah, I know he does.
Step Brothers is a cinematic masterpiece. Have you ever seen Step Brothers?
Yeah.
Okay.
I lived with my brother for a long time.
I was just going to say, like, if you've never seen Step Brothers, we should watch it.
Can't believe you haven't guessed who my favourite musical actor is yet, who's in this.
Well, I thought it was Darren Criss.
No. My favourite musical actor.
That could be anyone.
No, it couldn't. You know who it is.
We might not have an episode next week if I can't figure out who this actor is, because I might be dead.
I might just not tell you, and we'll see next week.
We'll see next week if I can figure it out.
Yeah.
There's no business like show business. There is no business like show.
No.
Is that not the producers?
No.
Oh.
This is going to be a great episode.
Fun next week. I am a big fan of Matthew Broderick.
I think
he's brilliant in Ferris Bueller, one of my favourite films. He's obviously Simba.
Yep.
I think he is brilliant in Deck the Halls with Danny DeVito. That's one of my favourite trashy Christmas films.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, you're going to have a treat. It's got Kristen Chenoweth in.
Him and Nathan Lane. So.
Nathan Lane, as in Timon's in this one?
Yeah.
Of course. Is Nathan Lane your favourite musical actor?
No. You know who my favourite musical actor is.
Well, this is where I'm going to send an appeal out to Twitter, Instagram. Help me save my relationship.
We've mentioned them in previous episodes, so... And I'm saying them, so you can't figure out.
Instagram and Twitter. At It's a Musical Pod. Reach out. Help me salvage my relationship with Drew. Who is her favourite musical actor in The Producers? Who is your favourite actor in The Producers? And what's your favourite moment of this show? Have you seen Once Upon a Mattress? If not, check it out on Disney Plus. 4 stars.
We're not sponsored.
But I reckon if we try enough, we might be. And if our sponsorship was just free Disney Plus, I'd be on board with that.
Oh, yes.
I don't want a cameo in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as great as that would be. I'll happily just take free Disney Plus. But check it out. I had not an inkling about this one, and I really enjoyed it. If you've never seen this show, watch it. It's a lot of fun. Get involved in the conversation at Twitter, at Instagram, and
you could email us at itsamusicalpod@gmail.com.
And until next week, where we go, I'm assuming, behind the scenes as we take on roles of producers.
Yeah.
Have a magnificent
Musical Monday.